This episode of the Major Spoilers Podcast is being brought to you by Loot Crate. If you're looking for gear, collectible housewares, and more from your favorite pop culture franchises, look no further than Loot Crate. They offer a range of geek and gamer items for less than $20 a month. And if you want to take it to the next level, you can check out the Loot Crate DX, which gives you even bigger, better loot. If you're looking for some clothing, they've got Loot Wear, which is the monthly wearable and accessory subscription. They have a whole bunch of stuff over at lootcrate.com. And September is all about speed. The September Loot Crate has high-octane assortment of goodies from Batman, CW's The Flash and Arrow, Battlestar Galactica, Iron Man, and Gone in 60 Seconds. If you have a style need, you'll love the Speed Loot Wear Collection featuring Sonic Socks for when you've got to go fast, a Transformers wearable for your world-saving needs, and a winning Mario Kart t-shirt and a whole lot more. You can look for that in the Loot Wear Collection coming out this month. You have until the 19th, though, if you want to get this Speed Crate. You have until the 19th at 9 o'clock p.m. to subscribe and receive that month's crate. But if you miss the cutoff date, you're going to be out of luck. So make sure you head over to lootcrate.com/spoilers, enter the code spoilers, and save on any new subscription. That's right, lootcrate.com/spoilers, enter the code spoilers, and save. Thank you, Loot Crate, for sponsoring this episode of the Major Spoilers Podcast.
The Major Spoilers Podcast covers news, reviews, and of course, spoilers, and goes into details about the topics discussed. So if you haven't read, listened, or watched the items we talk about, you might want to come back later.
I'm Matthew.
I'm Ashley.
I'm Rodrigo.
And I'm Steven, and you're listening to the Major Spoilers Podcast, the podcast for pop culture and comic fans.
In this issue, just like last week, we're taking a look at an insectoid hero in blue, but this one's a little more rational. Plus, monsters unleashed at Marvel, Saga returns an Image, the BPRD back in action at Dark Horse, and the Dominion of Night falls at Oni Press. We've got it all, plus our usual array of opinions, insight, and love. Arrayed in the mighty Major Spoilers manner, accept no substitutes, believe no lies, post no bills, faith no more, because the Major Spoilers Podcast is on the air.
Welcome to issue 693 of the Major Spoilers Podcast. Thank you so much for downloading and sharing this episode with a friend. Without you, our faithful listeners and cool people who may be joining us for the first time, we wouldn't be able to do this show. So thank you, everybody.
Woo.
Yeah.
Introduce us to the cool people.
Well, here's a cool person, Ashley Victoria Robinson. How you doing?
I already know her.
I'm doing so good. How are you guys?
Well, real quick before we jump into the main news segment, I wanted to talk to you about a comic book story that you and Jason Inman will have published soon.
That is super true. So Alterna Comics, awesomely, for the second year in a row, is publishing something called the If Anthology. It is a lot of science fiction-y type stories, and this year's theme was superheroes, so how could we not? It is called Terrific. It is about a character called Captain Terrific, who is basically visually your African-American Superman, drawn by the amazing Nick Robles, who made him unfairly attractive for a comic book character to be. And it is the first story in the If Anthology, so if you just want to pick it up and read ours, you don't even have to look that hard for it. There's a Kickstarter where you can pre-order it with some exclusive coolness. It is also a featured preview in Previews Magazine, so you can now go down to your local comic book store and tell them that you're a friend of mine and order it and tell them how awesome it is.
Yeah, totally.
And it comes out on November 30th.
And it's you know, it is a big volume. I mean, it is not just a, you know, short 28-page comic. This is a tome. I don't know what
there was like over 100 contributors. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's really crazy and big. And like I said, the Kickstarter is going on right now. You can go find it over at Kickstarter.com. And of course, as Ashley said, go pre-order it in your previews catalog. If you don't know what a previews catalog is, then may I suggest to your listener get yourself down to your local comic book shop, because they can give you one of those and help you order one. And remember, comics just aren't DC and Marvel. There are other publishers, and Alterna is certainly one of those, and they have some pretty good stuff. I would suggest go checking them out. I believe it's alterna.com is where you can find more.
It is.
On their website. And I can't wait. The very first one in the
very
anthology.
First. We're number one.
That is
we're
awesome.
Number terrific.
Yeah. actually, it's alternacomics.com. alternacomics.com. So there you go. All right. So there you go, Matthew. There's a famous person you have met. And so have our listeners. Now let us get to some news. We got three items we can talk about this week. We can talk about Stranger Things getting a second season. We can talk about Monsters Unleashed over at Marvel, or we can talk about Happy Hogan Returns for Spider-Man Homecoming. Let's spin the wheel of destiny. Let's see where it lands. Round and round it goes. Happy Hogan. No, Stranger Things. I'd love to talk about that. But no, let us talk about Monsters Unleashed. So this was Marvel's big tease all last week about Cullen Bunn was going to be teaming up with a bunch of different artists, Adam Kubert, Greg Land, Salvador LaRocca, Steve McNiven, Lionel Yu. And we found out at the end of the day at the Baltimore Comic Con that this big project is Monsters Unleashed coming in 2017. Now, Matthew, this Monsters Unleashed kind of sounds like something familiar for some reason.
Well, it is an established Marvel property.
Is it? I didn't know 13 issues was a established property.
Oh, yeah. For Marvel?
Okay.
Especially Marvel in 1973? Yeah. But in the early 1970s, monster comics were all the rage, partly because of the defanging of the Comics Code Authority. And Marvel put out a bunch of books through their black and white imprint, Curtis Publishing.
Curtis Magazines, yeah.
Yeah, this is one of the books that actually carries a Marvel imprint on the cover. Mm-hmm. Some of the Curtis books don't, but Monsters Unleashed basically was kind of their take on Famous Monsters of Filmland, only with comic strips done by the Marvel people. Issue one is phenomenal. It's got this great story by Roy Thomas, adapted from a Robert Block story. And drawn by, I believe, Nestor Redondo. It's just a gorgeous book. I have all 11 issues. I can never find the annual, but I have the 11 issues, or is it 10 or 11? I don't remember. But I have all the issues of Monster Unleashed that I picked up when I was trying to complete my collection of Tales of the Zombie in the 80s. So,
So Monsters Unleashed featured stories that had Man-Thing in it, Werewolf by Night, they even had Frankenstein's Monster. Blade was over there on Tomb of Dracula.
Blade first appeared in Vampire, or not first, but Blade's first solo story was in Vampire Tales, which was another black and white Curtis book.
So what other monsters besides those three were featured in? I mean, this is an anthology series, so one assumes that you got a couple of stories a la Creepy Comics type stuff in this Monsters Unleashed back in the day.
And they did the Warren and the Famous Monsters of Filmland type story, so they'd write a story with pictures about, say, a horror movie. The first issue has a theme of werewolves, so it talks about the Universal werewolf flick. But I believe there was a Manphibian, who was a fishman.
That sounds like a asylum movie.
Yeah, he was one of the monsters, or the Legion of Monsters with Man-Thing and Ghost Rider and Morbius. I believe Morbius makes an appearance in Monsters Unleashed. Jack Russell, the werewolf. I love that. I know that they had at least one story that was with the Marvel version of the Frankenstein monster, who had his own four-color book around the same time. It's really interesting stuff, but all of the art is this toned black and white stuff. And it's done by guys like Vicente Alcazar and Nestor Redondo, and a lot of the guys who came out of, I believe it was Filipino studios around those times. And it's just beautiful art.
Well, that's what I liked about, I know it's different publishers, but when you look at the black
Wendigo.
And white. Yeah, when you look at the black and white Conan or Vampirilla or, Tomb of Dracula, I think, was in color, right?
Tomb of Dracula was... Well, there was a Tomb of Dracula black and white magazine, and then there was the regular Tomb of Dracula monthly comic, which came first, I can't remember right off the top of my head, because that's the one Wolfman book I don't love.
I just know, being a young child and seeing those things on the stands, that, wow,
right,
those look scary and frightening, and I want to read them, but it's got monsters, so maybe I won't.
Monsters.
Yeah.
See, my response was... Ooh, it's got monsters. Give me all of them.
Now, Rodrigo Cullen Bunn is taking on the writing duties of this. We know Cullen from Six Gun, so he knows a little bit of horror stuff. Is this good news when we hear that he may be taking on or will be taking on Monsters Unleashed?
I mean, it's interesting. We really don't have much information about about which direction they're going to be going with. Is it going to be separate stories? Is it going to be a single one? But the names attached are Some of them are like, yeah, we're in good hands. And some of them are like, are we? But I think that varies from person to person based on
which land you're in.
Yeah, if you will.
If I will.
Oh, yeah. Ashley, are you into monsters? Are you into monster comics?
To a certain degree. I kind of am when in like Flights of Fancy. Like, I just finished reading all of the Chilling Tales, Chilling Adventures of Sabrina. I can't even remember.
That book is dark.
I think it is criminally underrated because you hear a lot about Afterlife with Archie, mm-hmm. and this is some of my bias that I don't like zombies, so I don't read Afterlife with Archie,
right.
But I never hear anything about the Sabrina tale, and I like that it really leans into all of the puritanical fears about witches and that mm-hmm. they're true. I think well-written and well-conceived horror and well-conceived reimagining of old horror properties is really exciting, and it's obviously super trendy right now. I am tentatively excited for this.
Well, you said you don't want to read Afterlife with Archie, but I would say go pick up issue number 10 that I reviewed last week on the show, because it has nothing mm-hmm. to do with zombies. And it may
I know. I almost did because of Josie.
you really should go pick it up. It has nothing to do with zombies in that issue. There is not a zombie that appears, but it's still frightening and chilling and spectacular and web slinging and all that stuff.
I need you to give me important updates like this.
Okay. Yeah, no,
forward.
it's seriously, if you don't like zombies, then go check out Afterlife with Archie number 10. It's still got the horror thing going with it. But again, I don't want to spoil it because there's a kind of a big reveal about why Josie has been around since 1902 or 1906 or whenever it is. So I guess for me, when it comes to Monsters Unleashed, knowing that the original was a black and white anthology series, mm-hmm. I'm kind of hoping that this new series is also going to be in black and white. But what are the chances that Marvel would go black and white? Would that be too much of a, oh my gosh, this isn't a real comic because it's doesn't have any color in it? I think you can do more horror with black and white than you could with, you know, shades of red.
I think
you
can.
Moon Knight was mostly black and white, wasn't it?
Yeah.
The newer stuff?
Yeah.
Or like ink wash, I guess.
Kind of a monochrome thing. I think the difference is in 73... black and white was considered artsy, you know, away from the four color pow, biff, zonk. In the year 2016, a black and white comic generally, and this is an unfair prejudice, but generally denotes a lower tier
right.
book, a really low independent book, or a book that is, you know, inexpensive. And people look at that as somehow a black and white book is less than a color title. Whereas I think in the 70s, those prestige black and white magazines were a big deal.
Yeah.
So I think they could. I don't think they will. And mm-hmm. the main reason for that is just they are Marvel. And everything that Marvel does, they want it to be kind of a their Marvel thing. And I think Marvel is known for right now the big sprawling adventure, fighty, look, here's a movie that costs $12 billion. I think what we're actually going to get is more of a modern take on the monster stuff, which hopefully will stick, because I'd love to see another huge wave of monster stuff.
Yeah. Do you think that this is like meant to be a launching pad for potential Man Thing project?
That's what I was wondering. I was just going to ask that. Yeah. What is Giant Size Man Thing doing these days?
The last time,
with Artie and Leech.
The last time I saw Man Thing was in the previous volume of Thunderbolts, where he was their Quinjet. He was their transportation.
Okay. All right.
Because of his ability to warp through dimensions. But I don't think he has the power to do that anymore, because he gave it to Howard the Duck at the beginning of Howard's News.
And what's Morbius the Vampire up to?
I haven't seen Morbius in a long time.
Since that solo series?
Ooh, maybe.
What about Blade? What has he been up to?
Blade's still floating around being
rebooting
Blade.
Another movie.
What's
just recently, he was a mighty Avenger. Frankenstein's dead.
What about Werewolf by Night? Well, of course he's dead. What about Werewolf by Night?
He's actually dead.
I mean, I'm just going, you know, here are monsters that characters we haven't seen in a while. So maybe mm-hmm. this is kind of that launching point to see which ones will resonate, kind of like the, you know, DC just not too long ago wrapped up their anthology Legends of Tomorrow series. and or at least I think it's wrapped. And you kind of got a feel for which of the stories were fan favorites and which ones kind of people were cool on. Mm-hmm. Maybe you're right, Rodrigo. Maybe this is this launching point to get a new Man Thing or Morbius or Blade series out in people's minds.
Get a new Man Thing
and potentially movies, you know, get something ahead of time where you can use as a little bit of a test bed to see, like, are people interested if we go this direction? And basically entirely undermine DC's, like, potential Justice League Dark project.
Yeah. You know, that's interesting you bring up Justice League Dark. I mean, Justice League Dark is the horror movie that's, you know, going to focus on the magic side of the DC universe. We've got the animated film coming up very soon.
Yeah, because they have magic, unlike Marvel, which only has science we haven't explained yet.
Yeah, well,
except for
Doctor Strange will hopefully explain that, which would be a really good launching point for Blade to come back, right? I mean, that's never Blade has
actually
never
would
really
create
been...
a Netflix show.
Oh yeah, I think Netflix would be the perfect place. But I mean,
he'd be great in that Defenders niche.
With you know, with all this horror stuff going on, I mean, we've got the Justice League Dark, we got Afterlife with Archie, as we mentioned a moment ago, is a huge thing. We see more horror comics from indie publishers. I mean, Vampirilla is doing gangbusters over at Dynamite. We see the Ghoul Scouts and the Vampire This and the Vamp Blade and Zombie Tramp and all this stuff. I know, right?
All actual comics. If you're aware, actual comics were
these are not the jokes.
And these are not jokes.
I will say this about Zombie Trip. As someone who until recently worked in retail, people love that book.
Oh, I know. It's crazy, right? I mean, if you've read it, and I'm sure everyone here has at least taken a peek inside the cover, it gets really weird. It's, I mean, it's a weird horror story with this weird sexual stuff thrown in. You know, it sells, and horror movies are making a big, return in theaters and are doing quite well.
Blair Witch remake though.
Oh, I mean, Matthew's going to be sitting there screaming throughout
I'm going to watch that. I'm super psyched about a Blair Witch remake.
Yeah. So if people are so excited about this, do you think that the horror comic genre with this Monsters Unleashed is about to take a giant leap forward?
Well, I think that as far as the visibility of it, the visibility of a horror comic thing, having Marvel be a part of it is a huge deal, because if you've read the stuff that's coming out of, you know, people like Xenoscope and whatever the other company with the
Action
Poppy
Lab.
Hoppy, and even Action Lab has horror books too.
Mm-hmm.
And they're really kind of a thing unto themselves, because they're not doing superheroes. And a lot of times when you're not doing superheroes and you're in a monthly color comic, people are like, well, I don't know what that is. But I feel like having Marvel say, yes, we too are doing these books, hopefully it will be the rising tide for all ships. Because I would really love to see just a massive horror boom. I'd love to see Valiant Horror. I'd love to see, you know, more horror coming out of the Vertigo people.
Mm-hmm.
I'd love to see just people going nuts with concepts that we've never seen before. You know, do a Conan horror book, Conan versus vampires.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be
You know, give Magica the spell her own title.
Comic at IDW. Listen, I'm sure there is one. I'm sure there is one floating around Europe that IDW hasn't grabbed yet. But you know, it's funny we're talking about, oh, we'd like to see this return to horror genre, but I mean, as we're talking, I'm thinking, oh, yeah, there's a zombie book. There's a horror book. There's a creepy anthology. There's a weird love anthology. I mean, there's, you know, all these publishers, especially smaller publishers, are cranking out horror books left and right. Even Dark Horse, you know, they have the BPRD Hellboy stuff still in their stock and other scary tales.
And Baltimore.
Yeah, Baltimore is another one. I mean,
it's another one.
It seems like this stuff.
Rivers of London thing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's over at Titan Comics. Yeah. It just seems like all of this stuff is there simmering, and it's been around and it's always been around for a long time, but it needs something like, again, if you go back to pre-code days where Eerie and Creepy and all those guys got ditched out because of somebody's hopped up on goofballs during their testimony.
That was EC. That was pre-Eerie and Creepy. But
right. But
we'll give you points for the goofball.
But if you get to the point where suddenly 1973 rolls around and Marvel unleashes Monsters Unleashed to compete with Monsters of Filmland and other things. I mean, that's kind of a big deal where suddenly it's front and center. Maybe the pot is simmering with all these horror comics going on right now, but it needs another Monsters Unleashed moment where suddenly the whole top explodes. I mean, even Vertigo has American Vampire did. I don't know if that's still going, but you know, maybe that's what it needs to have this huge explosion of monsters in your face type stuff going forward.
Well, I don't want monsters in my face.
There is always that preconceived thing with people who are like your casual fans that if it's not at one of the big two, it's not like a legitimate thing.
Right. It's not real, quote unquote.
Yeah. And the cool thing about if Marvel is doing this, even if this is just a one-off event that totally doesn't reboot their universe, like so many things at Marvel are.
No, everything reboots the universe.
I don't know if that was a good sentence or not. but that could really lend a magnifying glass to some of the stuff that's been out there for some time for the people who have been looking for it. I mean, Nicholas Scott and Greg Pak do a book about witches that I kind of feel like nobody reads, and it's really good. Black Magic with a K, if you haven't checked it out. And even that, even the, a little boost, a little signal boost, a little retweet like that could go a long way. And then maybe, you know, Marvel or DC would return to it in a more serious fashion, a la, you know, the 1970s kind of take on it.
Right. So, you know, the Monsters Unleashed were not people getting eviscerated and blood splattered and crossed 100 stuff. Right, Matthew?
Oh my God, Cross.
Well, they were not Cross 100 stuff, but they were not code approved. They were aimed at adults, and there was some
violence.
Nudity
and some stuff, but I mean, it's not like Cross, right, where people are eating their own entrails.
Oh no. Let's put it this way. By the standards of the day, it was racy stuff.
Right.
The amount of violence, the amount of sexuality, the amount of adult material you get in a Curtis comic black and white book of 1973, you can get in an issue of Avengers in 2016.
Yeah, so we've had this conversation, I think, here before or somewhere else. Oh, I know certainly on Finally Friday, where Dr. Brad Will and I sat down to talk about what I find scary. You know, there's this reason why I think Stranger Things has been so successful, because it scares you without being gross, without being a splatter porn fest, right? Kind of stuff. And so many of the horror books that are out now, Vamplayed, Crossed, whatever, do kind of delve into that extreme gross factor when it comes to quote unquote horror. Maybe this is a way to tell scary tales a la Afterlife with Archie without being totally gross about it, without relying on the gross factor, the shock value, to make it horrific.
Yeah, your psychological horror rather than your gore-driven horror.
I'd be
down for that paradigm shift. I could get behind
I totally would be too, and that would be nice if they could do this.
I think that both are legitimate, and to some degree, both are necessary, because you need your Herschel Gordon Lewis as much as you need your George Romero when it comes to the way stories are being told. And Crossed is too far for me. Crossed is way too far for me. But I don't necessarily feel like it's less artistic or less successful or a lesser property, because that's what the audience may be looking for. They may be looking for that gross out, over the top psycho factor.
But maybe they've hit that audience.
Well said that just because it's not your cup of tea doesn't mean that there's anything wrong with it.
No.
Sure.
What I'm saying is that, there are a lot of people that love Crossed, right? I remember we were in Utah and a guy came in and he goes, I just am looking for an intense comic. I just want something that's, you know, so over the top. And I was like, well, here's Crossed. You should probably read this. There are people that are totally satisfied with the splatter gore horror comics that are out there now. But there are people like Ashley and me and maybe Rodrigo who are totally into what Afterlife with Archie is doing, or the Chilling Adventures of Sabrina.
Chilling Adventures of Sabrina is bloody as hell.
We
see Harvey killed and ripped apart on panel.
But maybe
but
he's
gory.
A weenie, so it's okay.
Yeah. But maybe it is this. Maybe it is the psychological horror, the banging of the in the other room late at night.
Like Blair Witch.
Yeah. Maybe that's what we want. Maybe this is a way to attract a new group of people to
the
horror.
Blair Witch.
No, I mock your reaction to the Blair Witch. Don't confuse the two. So Monsters Unleashed, coming in January 2017, Rodrigo said, we know very little about the project except that it's coming. We don't know if it's an ongoing, if it's a six-issue mini, if they will reboot it in a year with Monsters Unleashed 2.
If it's actually a novelization of the second Scooby-Doo movie.
Right.
Oh, man. The sequel I only
Monsters University, I think.
There you go. We will follow this story. And, of course, you can find out more about this as the story progresses over at MajorSpoilers.com. If you enjoy our conversations, doesn't matter if it is the Major Spoilers podcast or if it's Finally Friday that I mentioned previously, or maybe it is the Dueling Review podcast, Critical Hit, so much more. If you enjoy the programming that we put out, head over to patreon.com/majorspoilers, patreon.com/majorspoilers. We would love for you to become a patron. Help us continue and push this show further into the future. We know that you love comics. We do too. patreon.com/majorspoilers. Let us get into some reviews, you guys.
Review.
The comic for Best Ongoing, Best Writer, Best Artist, Saga at the Harvey Awards 2016. Matthew, why don't you fill us in with what's going on with the latest issue or the most recent issue of Saga?
Saga's back, you guys! Oh my god, Saga's back! And oh my god, the baby's so adorable! Oh my god!
So, Saga is the ongoing story of a family, Marco and Alana, who are two incompatible species whose people are constantly at war, and their cute baby and all of the people who kind of form a nucleus in and around their cute baby. Right now, that involves a dead teenager in a super cruel t-shirt and Prince Robot the Fourth, who I gotta warn you guys, this is definitely an adult book. There are parts of Prince Robot that I never, ever, ever wanted to see that are clearly displayed in this issue.
Yeah, his nuts and bolts.
His aerial receptor. He's trying to get the Fox Network from the look of things. But that's an old person joke. I'm so sorry. And of course, a young lady of Marco's race who has a couple of secrets of her own. This is the beginning of a new arc. And as with the beginning of any arc of Saga, it's terrifying. And the terrifying part of Saga is, of course, that it is narrated by Hazel, who is the baby, who's now 5 years old. You guys, Hazel's five. I feel like my own kid is growing up. She's got beautiful wings and big horns on her face. And she's this adorable kid who wanders around and her life is just a series of disasters. And she's super excited about it, you guys. But they've run out of fuel. And so they have to take their ship, which is also a tree, to a terrible world called Fang to try and fuel up. And of course, Fang is one of the hot spots of the war between Alana's people and Marco's people. I don't want to spoil too much, but I will tell you that most of the characters that you expect from Saga, if you know anything about Saga, are in this. Sophie is in it. The lying cat is in it. Marco's ex-girlfriend, I believe her name is Gwendolyn, is in it.
Yes.
And there's a lot of really wonderful stuff. I think I missed issue 36 because I don't remember how the last arc ended. All I remember is that it's been far too long since we've had Saga. And this issue is gorgeous. The cover is a wraparound, beautiful, terrible scene of war. And of course, there's a cute little kind of, I don't know if he's a possum or a meerkat or what, who shows up in the issue, who reminds me a little bit of Gus, who I think was a walrus. I don't know. Guys, you may remember Gus.
Oh,
Gus
he's a seal.
He's a seal. He's a seal with a battle axe who rides around on a walrus.
He's a baby seal.
That's what it is.
Yes.
Yes. And this issue ends with a big to be continued shocking moment involving the maybe a meerkat people. It has a couple of things in it that are really bad. And it has Hazel actually saying, I remember many adventures of my youth and they usually ended badly. This one ended the worst. I'm like, oh my God, you guys, Hazel is scaring me. It's hard to review a book of this quality because what it turns into for me is just telling you all the really cool bits. And oh my God. But this is a really, really well-crafted issue. And even if you've never read Saga before, I will not say you can pick this up and understand everything that's going on, because it is an ongoing kind of sprawling well, Saga, the title kind of describes it. But you know who these people are. Just picking up this book, if this is the first issue you read, you will get enough hooks into the lives of everyone on board this ship and everyone that you see. And of course, one of them's dead, so it's not a life at all. To where you will want to read more of this. Every time I read an issue of Saga, I'm like, where is more Saga? Give me more Saga. What are you doing, Brian K. Vaughan? I don't care. Write more Saga. So that should tell you a little something. It's beautifully drawn, beautifully written. Four slice of meatloaf affair. I think really the only downside of it is I want more Saga right now.
Yeah, there you go. And again, if you need a reason, I mean, it was the best writer at the Harvey Awards, Brian K. Vaughan. Best artist, Fiona Staples, Saga, and best continuing or limited series, Saga. I mean, I would say of the big awards that are given out at the Harveys, Saga taking that again multiple times is a testament to how good the book is. So there you go.
Ooh, by the way, this issue announces that they're selling Isabella's shirt, and I want one.
Yes. Okay.
Okay, so if you would buy me one of those for Christmas, Ashley.
Okay.
Okay. I'm a 5X extra large.
Ashley, why don't you take us into the world of Riverdale? We've mentioned Archie a couple of times.
I've read a lot of Archie recently. Here's a book that Fiona Staples drew in between drawing Saga. But it's not her anymore. It's Veronica Fish, who does a pretty fair Fiona Staples light. So if you like Saga, you'll probably like looking at Archie. This issue number 11, they've been toying in this new Archieverse with the whole Betty versus Veronica thing, which has been a part of our popular culture for as long as everyone in my family that I know of has been alive. And the cool thing about this issue is that they finally bring it to a head. There are people wearing Team Betty and Team Veronica shirts, and there is a narratively sound reason for that going on, which is pretty impressive. Well done, Mark Waid. So Archie's dating Veronica. That's going kind of bad. Betty and Archie used to date until this thing happened, and they've kind of been dancing around that. And Betty's got a nice new boyfriend named Syed, like the guy from Lost. And they decide that in order to take out their "we are destined to be together but can't right now because we're 14 angst" out on each other by forming rival bands and playing at a battle of the band, which is the most Archie Comics thing that you could ever do, and yet somehow still compelling and exciting and totally worth taking the time to read. I'm not going to tell you who wins. I'm not going to tell you who is actually a good singer, but the nice thing about this is that you do get to see the duality of being an adolescent, in that Archie and Betty in particular are very callow to each other and very childish in their approaches to dealing with this tension between themselves. But by the end of the issue, they ultimately come to a really mature decision about how they should move forward with their lives. Although it does involve both of their respective significant others seeing something happen and being left questioning whether or not their status as significant others will remain. This is my favorite. This is my favorite.
Which side is Moose on?
Moose is actually in this issue, though, which is dope because Moose has been, as he's wanted to be, like a total background character, but he has a narrative reason to be here and to be involved, and he's not an idiot.
Moose is an idiot.
Well, not in this issue, though.
Okay.
He is capable, and he may even be talented. And that's cool because, you know, Archie characters are stuck in their 1950s of it all. And we do get Moose and Dilton are in this issue. And while they both resemble their classic jock and nerd tropes, they are integral to Betty's plan. So that's cool. And Moose is far handsomer than he's ever been to date. So well done, Veronica Fish. And this was the first time that I felt like, even though she's still doing Fiona Staples light, it seemed very contrived in the first, I think this is her fifth or sixth issue. And now I think she feels, or it seems like the style is more relaxed and more organic, and it's just fun to read. It's not distracting. Except for Jughead, because it's definitely sexy male Alana still, I'll take it. Yeah. And that's fine. Archie number 11 for being the tropiest Riverdale trope ever. and somehow being the best comic I read this week, I can't give it anything less than 5 slices of the meatloaf, and seriously recommend that you check it out, because I don't know what this CW series is going to do to my beloved characters.
Well, if one thing we do know is that Barb from Stranger Things, we know what happened after she went to the Upside Down. She landed over at the Riverdale series, where she will be playing Ethel in the
that's
series.
That's true.
Yeah.
So. I think that's a great casting choice. I just started watching Stranger Things, Steven, so I actually understand now.
Yeah, it's so good. We'll have to geek out when you are done with that. And I think Rodrigo just finished it recently, too.
I did, yeah.
Ooh. We're going to talk. Everybody's going to talk about it. Or you can listen to me and the great Nate O, one of our fine patrons. He called up on Finally Friday when we had our Stranger Things geek out, and he and I talked for a good 30 minutes about how cool the show is. So you can go check that out in the Major Spoilers Podcast Network feed.
Nice.
Let's see. Rodrigo, when does Knights Dominion come out from Oni Press? Is that out this week?
I think it's out next week.
All right. Well, hit us up with your thoughts on it.
All right, so Knights Dominion is a fantasy adventure. It actually starts out. I had a lot of feels throughout all of this, because it starts out with a bunch of characters meeting at a tavern, and it's like a fantasy type setting. And I'm like, oh no, are we actually doing characters meeting at a tavern?
Your favorite.
Yeah. So I'm like, oh Lord. I don't know if I can do this after Fells 5, who didn't meet at the tavern, but you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
So I'm like, okay, so I just assume that something different is coming, right? It's like, here's the D&D setup, and then bam, something else is gonna happen. So I kind of was like, okay, I'm gonna just keep rolling here. And see what happens. I will say, just right off the bat, really like the art, really like the character designs. It is kind of medieval fantasy, but it seems a more diaspora-y fantasy. It's not all like classic pointy head wizards and knights in chainmail kind of stuff. It seems like it's more of like a Moroccan or like Gibraltar type, you know, situation where like there's lots of different ethnicities and cultures walking around. So you know, the comic introduces you to a handful of characters, the characters that are presumably going to be this adventuring party that is going to go after some treasure, does a good job of kind of showing you their motivations as to why they're going to get involved. It has like a couple of cool tricks, a cool reveal about a character that you kind of see coming, but it's, you know, it's okay. It's like, you know, they're talking about this legendary thief, and then it turns out someone we've already met is a legendary thief, so that's cool. And then you know about that turn that I was hoping was really going to get me into it.
Yeah,
it actually did the opposite, because about two-thirds of the way through of this book, Batman shows up.
What?
Everything's better with Batman.
Yeah, true. A guy.
I don't think that's true.
No, it is.
A guy wearing a cape and a kind of a helmet with like little bat ears shows up and busts up and like busts the thief of the party. And goes after her and has a line, which I don't have queued up here, but it's like the comic is called Knight's Dominion. The central character is the knight, and that's N-I-G-H-T, who's a thief. She just goes under an alias. But you know, he says something like, I mean, he's like, you may go by the knight, but I am the knight, you know, kind of stuff.
Are you sure it's not Batman? Well,
okay.
Oh,
so here's what I want you guys to do if you get a chance.
I probably have
Google
this.
Knight's Dominion. Go into the images, and probably about 10 or 12 images in, you will see this character.
Well, I've got the first issue right here. So what page?
Yeah. So, okay. So flip. You know what? You'll know it when you see it.
Okay.
Just keep flipping, and eventually you'll see that character.
Toward the end.
And this, yeah, it's pretty close to the end. And this just to say that it took me out of it is very light.
Oh yeah, that's Owlman for sure. Batman Owlman.
Yeah, so this launched me into the stratosphere as far as this comic book was concerned.
You've even got I am Batman face.
Yeah, I reached escape velocity here. It's interesting. It's an interesting take, but also the character is like weirdly introduced simultaneously in a very jarring way, and also in a very casual and sudden way, mm-hmm. and then kind of leaves. It's like it's weirdly like this side character is like, oh, by the way, this world also has a Batman, you know? Just so thrown off by it. So completely
wow.
by yeah. it, right? Right?
Wow.
And it's like, yeah, oh God, let me see if
this night is mine.
No, I have the
my mom's not. Name is Martha.
Yeah.
And I am called the Fury.
Yeah. Which is interesting because wasn't that like the reverse Batman?
Yeah. The Wrath was the reverse
Wrath.
Batman.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
But yeah.
So
he kind of looks like the Wrath in a way.
So I don't know if this is like, oh, this is actually secretly fantasy superheroes or something like that, but man oh man, did this just like get this like got chocolate into my peanut butter so hard that it actually made a hole in the bottom and all the peanut butter spilled out. So yeah, where are my ratings here? I'm going to give it 2.5 slices of meatloaf because the art like just carries this, and because it had like showed a lot of promise, and maybe this character won't return, but I'm guessing it will. So 2.5 slices of meatloaf. Let's just leave it there.
All right.
Knights Dominion number one.
All right.
I am the Fury.
Be on the lookout for that. Out this week from Dark Horse Comics, Rise of the Black Flame, written by Mike Mignola and Chris Roberson, with art by Christopher Mitten. We have seen the Black Flame all throughout BPRD and the Hellboy series. This is not that Black Flame, right? There have been many incarnations of the character claiming to be the Black Flame. This takes us back all the way to 1923 with the Cult of the Black Flame and people trying to tap into that energy, the mysticism, the power of what the Black Flame represents. But we don't get to see any Black Flame in this issue. We do get to see references to the Black Flame cult. What happens is this story starts out in Burma, and of course, this is the height of British colonialism and imperialism. And a young girl has been kidnapped from Muckety Mucks in town. And these two officers have been tasked with finding out what's been going on. And as they start to dig, they find out a number of girls have been kidnapped, supposedly by, they think, the Thuggee cult. But then they travel to Siam, modern day Thailand, and they meet up with a woman and her partner who have been investigating the horror and the cult for years. And they find out that, yes, there are girls that are disappearing in Siam as well. And it is all because of the Cult of the Black Flame. So four of them decide to team up and haunt this horror, to use a Lovecraftian monster there. And it's kind of cool. I mean, we're just kind of left at the end with a lot of backstory, a lot of introduction about who these characters are and what they're about. And then, hey, we're going to go off into the jungle and we're going to hunt some cultists with the help of a local drunkard. And there you go. It almost feels, you know what a backdoor pilot is?
Yeah.
I mean, just watch any episode of Happy Days and you're sure to bump into a backdoor pilot for Laverne and Shirley or
Mindy
or Joni Loves Chachi or what else came out of that show?
Came out of that show.
That weird Touched by an Angel episode.
Pink Lady and Jeff.
Law and Order.
Law and Order, yeah. All came out of Happy Days.
You know, the BPRD.
Scooby-Doo actually managed to spin off the American, Love American Style, which spun off Happy Tales.
Yeah.
Which then spun off Scooby-Doo in like an Ouroboros of time, space, and dimension. Thanks to Mark Mork.
This feels like a backdoor pilot. BPRD, the series, is coming to an end. Hellboy is technically over, even though we are seeing some adventures prior to Hellboy's death. This one takes the cult aspect and the Lovecraftian aspect all the way back to the 1920s, turn of the century in the 1920s. And it feels like we're getting the formation of a BPRD type team in the Lovecraft era, and I kind of dig it. You've got a she looks like not doesn't say she's a Creole woman, but she comes off as that. You also have a French witch hunter type woman. You have a British officer, and you also have an Indian officer, all teaming together to go and fight this this unknown cult. So it feels kind of spooky. It feels kind of scary. The biggest downside of this is there's a lot of buildup on who these characters are without really telling us who these characters are. It's like in one part, the lead officer is like, I remember strange things, flashing back to like 1890s London, where some monstrosity is breaking out from under the ground and how he went after and to fight it or to help people fight it. And it's a one-page thing, a one-page black and white flashback or a sepia tone flashback. And you don't get any more than that. And it's like, what's going on? So it feels like at some point this may turn into what's going on in the Mignola-verse. And it just feels like there's so much more to be told than what we're getting in just the setup for this story. So I have a feeling we'll be seeing more of these characters after this series concludes. The art is great. I think the story is great. Of course, Chris Roberson knows how to tell a tale, and he does fine. He's done fine with some of the other Hellboy stuff that he's worked on, and I think this series is going to be fine. I'm giving it 4 slices of meatloaf out of 5, but like I said, there's so much backstory that hasn't been told that it feels like we're getting a setup for a whole new launch of a ongoing series from these guys. So,
featuring Mork from Ork, I'm sure.
Featuring Mork from Ork, yeah. Right. Rise of the Black Flame, number 1. It is out this week from Dark Horse Comics. So there you go. Head over to majorspoilers.com. You can check out a bunch of other reviews, including a new writer that we have, Etienne. I don't know how you say his name. But he is he's just come on board at the beginning of the month, and he enjoys it. And he has some of you who may have been online before may recognize his name from stuff he did over in Europe and for some other websites, but he's doing stuff for us now. So welcome aboard. Also welcome aboard John, who's been working with us. What did he say? 2 months now, 3 months now. So, he's also knocking things out of the park with his review. So you can check out those reviews and a whole lot more over at majorspoilers.com. In fact, you can head over to Major Spoilers right now and you can check out the Major Spoilers poll of the week. So I was almost didn't put this poll up this week because last week's poll, the Namor versus Aquaman, it was still within like 2 votes either way. And I was and sometimes when it's that close, I let it continue a week. But one of our big patrons said, hey, man, here's an idea for a poll of the week. And I said, well, we can't let our patrons just go unrecognized. Well.
You're right.
So
we recognize you, Patreon.
So Vista Papadopoulosky, he had. That's my
we can't knowledge. Let him go unrecognized.
That's not his name.
it is now.
Oh yeah, it totally is now. He even laughs about it. But he wrote in and he wants to know about bromances. He says friendship is indeed magic, and there's a bunch of bromances in the comic book universe. But which one is the strongest bond? He wants to know which duo has the strongest bond. Ted Kord and Michael John Carter, that's Blue Beetle and Booster Gold. Luke Cage and Danny Rand, Iron Fist and Power Man. Tim Drake and Con-El, Superboy and Robin. Or Steve Rogers and Sam Wilson, Captain America and Falcon. Okay.
And also Captain America.
And also Captain America and Captain America.
Yeah, bro.
So Ashley, which duo has the strongest bond?
For me, it is unquestionably the blue and the gold. When I think about romances, I always think about Hawkeye and Trapper John. Mm-hmm. And then I think about Ted Kord and Michael Carter. Because for me, I think with a good, like, there's a fine line between bromance and like, wow, you should just kiss already. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of that has to do with sometimes the hard truths. And I think that Booster and Blue Beetle don't often want to deal with the hard truths. That's where you're, you know, especially in your Bwahaha incarnations. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. but they stick with each other through all of them. And sure, that argument can be made for every character on this list. But frankly, I don't like Connor, so I wasn't going to vote for that one. And I like both of these people. And because I just think they're like adorable screw ups together. So there was no question when I saw the potential options. I was going to go blue and gold. Definitely.
Yeah, I really started leaning towards Booster and Beetle too, because it's like, well, if ever a duo was dynamic, it would be these
right.
two, not dysfunctional like father and son. But for some reason, whenever I think bromance and characters, I always flash back to, and I forget which issue it was, but it's like Steve Rogers and Sam Wilson are in a bar together drinking.
Yeah.
And I'm like, whoa, they got their arms around each other.
Manly.
Yeah, they got their arms around each other and they're laughing and they're having a good time. And you can tell that these two, just in the comic book page, are like attached to the hip. They're like, they are the epitome of, you know, destined by fate to be together. And then, of course, when you see them in, was it the first Captain America movie or was it Winter Soldier? I forget which one that
Winter Soldier.
Where they're out running in the morning and that friendship starts there. It's like, wow, these two really have something. And even though the comic books really set it up, I really thought that the movies knocked it down as far as how important these two are to one another. So I was with Steve Rogers and Sam Wilson, Captain America and Falcon.
Nice.
Matthew, who did you pick?
Well, the answer here to me is a question of degree, because if you look at all of these pairs, they have a lot in common. Steve Rogers and Sam Wilson were brought together by the Red Skull in a terrible situation. Tim Drake and Connell were together like for years and years, and then Connell died and Tim Drake flipped out and changed his costume and totally ruined
it's
it
true.
To mm-hmm. honor his friend. And, you know, Ted and Booster actually kind of made an entire era of Justice League all by themselves. There are other players who are big, mm-hmm. but they're the ones who define it. They call it the Bwahaha League. Mm-hmm. That's their thing. But in the year 1972, Luke Cage came out of a trend of blaxploitation movies. And about a year and a half later, Iron Fist came out of a trend in Kung Fu Chop Saki movies.
Mm-hmm.
Now, both of those trends were dead by 1976. Pop culture moved on. But Power Man and Iron Fist, both born of these early 70s trends, I mean, they're fad superheroes in a lot of ways, as much as the Silver Surfer or Skate Man. But they came together and they made this weird oddball team of streetwise tough guy and weird guy from a Tibetan monastery. And they outlasted the trends that bore them by another 15 years as a team. And then one of them died. But that didn't stop their friendship. Oh, no, no, no. And Luke didn't ruin his costume just because Danny was dead. And then Danny came back from the dead. And then Luke was dead. And then he wasn't dead. And then Luke shaved his head and stopped calling himself Power Man. And nobody knows why. But they're still together. And also, they're going to be on TV soon. So you have to vote for the legacy that is Power Man and Iron Fist, which is, you know, totally what I did.
Power Man.
By the way, if you love
the forest,
if you love anything that that Luke Cage came out of, you need to check out The Get Down on Netflix.
Yes, I finished that. Wednesday night last week.
And Jimmy Smits.
The ending was fantastic.
Jimmy Smits.
Oh, and Jimmy Smits is fantastic in that. Yeah. Oh, yeah. If you haven't seen The Get Down, go check it out. Highly recommend it. And season two comes out in 2017. So there you go.
Keep in mind, I've seen Dolomite. So,
well, then
I
you
may
should
want
check
to
it out.
This,
you
want
to check out The Get Down. Rodrigo, we have one vote for Ted Kord and Michael John Carter. We have one vote for Luke Cage and Danny Rand. We have one vote for Steve Rogers and Sam Wilson. How are you going to cast your vote?
Well, it's not going to be for Tim and Connor, unfortunately. So we're not going to make this a four-way tie. I think for me, the important thing here is, like, there was one pair that I was definitely going to vote for because they're my favorite pair.
Maggot and
being,
Joseph?
Yes.
Hellboy and Abe, right?
Yep. It's, yeah. So I was all set to go for the butt-kickingest duo ever, in my opinion, which is Luke Cage and Danny Rand, Power Man and Iron Fist, because I just love that whole like Capital Cities of Heaven stuff. And Luke Cage comes in and the Daughters of the Dragon are in it. And that stuff is great. But honestly, to be perfectly honest, you have to give it to Steve and Sam. Like, those two are, in fact, joined at the hip. And the thing is, the interesting thing is that they've kind of stuck together, even as, like, especially because Captain America, basically, Falcon's popularity has always been pretty much this. It's like, he's always, like, been dancing around the B-list, sometimes getting knocked down. But Captain America has gone up and down like crazy throughout history. There are times when Captain America is huge for Marvel, times when nobody will touch Captain America. But they're still together. And when Captain America is popular, he brings up the Falcon. And when he's not, the Falcon kind of holds up the line. So I'll definitely give it to those two because they're always there for each other, even in the meta sense, as far as sales are concerned.
What sweet hetero life partners.
Yes. Yep. You know what Jason needs to do, Ashley? He needs to get some of that Captain America Falcon footage, mash it up into a Bosom Buddies 90s, 80s comedy intro. And that
copyright major spoilers.
Yeah, no, he's free to use it. He's free to use it because I know he likes.
What about on September 23rd, Steve Rogers' wife asked him to leave their shared domicile?
Oh my God.
Later that same year, Sam Wilson's wife asked him to leave as well. Can a winged guy live with a guy with a shield? They'll both be Captain America. It'll be the Odd Captains.
Yeah, yeah. All right.
Oh, my God. And Bucky lives like in the attic.
Yes. Yeah. He's the next door neighbor that just comes in unannounced.
Wacky name.
Oh, no. What was his name?
Al Molinaro.
Who was the guy? He was also on Newhart, and he played their neighbor that was or their friend that was always gambling with them with.
Jerry something.
Yeah. That's
who, Conway.
Was his character name on Newhart, and all that I know about him.
Yeah, he was the innkeeper, or the groundskeeper guy, the maintenance guy. All right, Matthew, we have shared our thoughts on who makes the strongest bond. How has everyone else cast so far? How has everyone else voted so far?
Well, right now, interestingly, though there are four people in, it's kind of a 50-50 split, which is weird. 17% of the vote, so one out of five saying Steve Rogers and Sam Wilson. 8% Tim Drake and Connell. Young Justice forever, represent. Imagine Tim Drake and Connell leaning on the front of the Quick Stop. And Tim is like,
to be here today.
I'm telling you. Oh. It'll be good. And then 37% and 38% of the vote likely for the blue and the gold and the loop punching. The power and the fist, if you will. Interestingly, if you switch their names, you get Blue Booster and Beetle Gold, but you also get Power Fist and Iron Man.
Power Fist and Iron Man running through the forest.
Damn it. Power Fist should be a character. Somebody create Fist.
I'm sure it's already been trademarked by Disney.
Wait, what's the name of the... Oh, no, that's Power Ring. The guy, Green Lantern guy.
Freedom Ring, isn't it?
Yeah, there was Freedom Ring. He was terribly.
Was he out with the spirit of 76?
He's written by Robert Kirkman.
Freedom Ring had a piece...
Freedom Ring.
He had a piece of a cosmic cube as a ring and allowed him to warp reality. And a big deal about him being this cool, openly gay character, and then they murdered him.
Ugh.
And Kirkman is like, in retrospect, perhaps those two things should not have happened together. And I'm like, really? Is that what you think?
I think in about 5 years, he'll come back and say, you know, in hindsight, I never really should have canceled Invincible. Listeners, you can head over to MajorSpoilers.com. You can cast your vote in the Major Spoilers poll of the week. Who's the best bro team?
Well, you didn't have Timberwolf and Block on here. And
I didn't make this up. I talk to our great patrons, patreon.com/majorspoilers. You can do all sorts of things, including voting as a high-level patron. You can pick what trade paperback we read in the future, and you can help pick out some of the news stories that we talk about each week on the Major Spoilers podcast, patreon.com/majorspoilers. Also, don't forget Tweaked Audio. TweakedAudio.com has a fine selection of fantastic earbuds, earphones, all sorts of things. I've been playing around with some binaural audio, and I popped in my tweaked audio earbuds today after recording some stuff. And of course, I was sitting at the same location where I just recorded it, but it was freaky at how clear the audio sounded and how the 3D stereo space comes alive. I think it has to do with these tweaked audio earbuds. So many different colors, designs, whatever. Head over to tweakedaudio.com, pick your favorite or favorites. When you check out, use the checkout code MAJOR, save 33%. Thank you, Tweaked Audio, for sponsoring this episode of the Major Spoilers Podcast. Podcast! Oh, if you follow me on Instagram, I shared a little Lego figure with you guys. I think you'll see that Lego set next week, actually. But Blue Beetle. I want to talk about Blue Beetle, because I like Blue Beetle a lot in all the incarnations. But this week, we are specifically talking about Jaime Reyes, and we are talking about the Blue Beetle from 2006, written by Keith Giffen with art by John Rogers, also written by John Rogers, art by Cully Hammer, Duncan Rouleau, Cynthia Martin, Phil Moy, a whole bunch more. I wanted to jump back into that first series because it seems like the current new, whatever this rebirth Blue Beetle is, at least Blue the Beetle. Rebirth issue felt a lot like that 2006 series where no one knows that LaDama was the bad guy. Okay. And interestingly, in the Shell-Shocked series, everyone thinks that Blue Beetle's scarab is magic until the final page when the dude kicks open the door and goes, "It ain't magic, it's alien," which
That's
is interesting.
The peacemaker.
Right. Which is interesting because in the Rebirth issue, everyone thinks that it's alien technology until Dr. Fate shows up and says, "It's all powerful magics."
Oh, that's cute.
Yeah, right?
They inverted it.
Yeah. And of course, it's Phantom Stranger in the 2006 series. And here it's Dr. Fate. So,
remember what Mort Weisinger always said.
What did Mort Weisinger always said? Give me a sandwich?
There's a three-year rule. No.
Oh, okay.
Well, he said that, I'm sure. Mort Weisinger always said there was a three-year rule. And you could retell a story after 3 years because your reader base has turned over.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's been 10 years. Oh, my God. It's been 10 years.
It's been 10 years.
Since Infinite Crisis. Since oh, my
52.
God.
It's been 10 years since 52.
Holy crap. I need to lie down. Oh, man. But yes, it's been 10 years.
Matthew, it's 10 years later.
Oh, my God. It's been 10 years since Infinite Crisis spun off this new Blue Beetle after murdering the old one with a terrible, terrible hate facery and evil that I will never forgive them for. So I think part of it is, yeah, they are trying to retell it, but I'm kind of really fine with that after 10 years.
So let's go back to 2006, Ashley. You recently have read this. In fact, you guys did a Jaime Reyes Blue Beetle for a Geek History lesson not too long ago. Of
it's
course,
true.
I recommend everybody go and listen to that. But what's coming? What's, you know, Infinite Crisis 52? Suddenly there's a new Blue Beetle on the scene. What led to this first issue?
I didn't teach that lesson.
Oh, okay. That's right.
So I'm going to throw Jason under the bus for that. I can tell you, though. So
okay.
In Countdown to Infinite Crisis, Ted Kord, who was the second Blue Beetle, the pudgy Blue Beetle, the best Blue Beetle, was doing his Justice League thing, and he was fighting these Omaks, right? Omaks are like these evil alien things. And he discovered that this evil douchebag named Maxwell Lord, who was also an evil douchebag on the Supergirl, now CW TV series, was the person behind all of the Omaks. And Maxwell Lord was like, well, it sucks that you figured this out, but you know what? You could join me. And then Ted Kord, Blue Beetle, who is never mean to anyone, and I wouldn't say he's a coward, but he's definitely not the bravest of your heroes. Says right into Maxwell Lord's face, "Rot in hell, Max," and then gets shot in the head. In a very harrowing, especially for a character that, like, as we intimated before, is known for like his humor and his lighthearted character. Like, he makes the ultimate sacrifice in a truly heroic moment that's also incredibly tragic. And then a scarab, which is actually alien, but may have been imbued by magic from Dan Garrett, the first Blue Beetle, who was a Charlton character, don't think about it too much, lands in El Paso, Texas, next to this cute little Latino boy and gives him magical powers.
Yeah, and at some point in the whole Omak brother eye kind of thing, a new Blue Beetle shows up and is doing things on the brother eye satellite. and basically saves the day.
Yep.
And then Batman just leaves him there.
Yes, because Batman's a jerk.
He tells him to tell his mom that he talked to Superman because people like Superman.
I've got younger children to worry about.
And then if you're not wearing green booty shorts, I cannot save you.
So in this series where it picks up, we're getting events that are happening seemingly earlier in the day, where Jaime and his friends discover the scarab in the ground. And then we start
Which was thrown from the Rock of Eternity by an explosion that killed Shazam.
Right. God, how crazy is this?
Day of Vengeance was a mess too, by the way.
And then we flash forward to events where he's Blue Beetle doing stuff and fighting crime and doing cool things, all while he's trying to balance his life with his friends. And then he goes home one day and his parents are like, "Where have you been for the last year, dude?"
And he's like, "What?
What?" And then the soundtrack goes, "Dun, dun, dun."
And then Michael J. Fox tries to get into the room. And it's like, "Wait a minute, this is my house." No.
Are you telling me that you built a time machine out of an ancient scarab?
We need to talk about your beetle, Marty.
Doc! The scarab's alive! He's in the Old West, but he's alive!
We found Dan Garrett, is that what you said? we found Dan Garrett, he's alive in
1885! He's 1885!
Something like that does happen, and they do all have to unite at a certain point.
That's exactly right, so be on the lookout. There's another free mashup for you, Jason. So the question, though, then is, or I guess the next point that happens in, is there is some kind of metahuman gang thing going on, Rodrigo, led by this mysterious person, LaDama. Now, what's going on here?
Apparently LaDama has been scooping up metahumans and taking them somewhere. They don't know where. And aside from that, there's just like a straight up like gang of like metahumans and friends kicking around called the Posse. And they're kind of like some of their crew has been taken by LaDama, so they're kind of after her. And then they had a bad first encounter with Blue Beetle, of course, because superpowered people always fight first. But then later on, they all kind of fall together to try and see what this mysterious personage is up to.
And it turns out that LaDama just happens to be the Blue Beetle's best friend's aunt.
Mm-hmm.
Dun, Which dun, is, dun. That's where your dun, dun, duns come in, man.
And that's where the dun, dun, no, it's a dun, dun, dun for issue two.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on. I mean, here we have a hero who is trying to come to grips with these new powers that he didn't want, trying to recapture a whole 1 year later scenario that was already played out in another series called 1 year Later. And then you have friends he's really trying to rebuild his life while trying to figure out how to be a superhero and navigate what's going on. And then discovering, oh, this isn't a magic thing that people want me for. This is actually alien technology stuff. It sounds like a kind of a cool story to tell.
The thing I like about it is that there's no wasted time.
Right.
This story trucks. And I think that might have been like the creators being like, we don't know if this is going to work, so we're going to tell as much of the story as possible in 22 pages. And there are some points where you're like, whoa, what?
Yeah.
Because the reveal of the 1 year later happens very quickly. I think it's the end of issue two. And then it gets explained in the next issue, which if you're reading the trade is fine. But I can't imagine what it must have been reading in real time publication history.
If I remember correctly, that was kind of explained with the Day of Vengeance and the Infinite Crisis stuff. Because this stuff had just happened recently within the last month or so.
Oh, sure.
And so it was fresh in people's minds about, hey, there's this new Blue Beetle on the scene. And right.
And the whole DC universe jumped forward a year at the same time. So all of the DC comics were basically, here's the new status quo, and we're going to build back to what happened in that missing year.
Oh, I see.
With 52, the weekly series. So, yeah, the 1 year later jump actually is a universal thing. And it was infuriating.
Yeah.
But some good stories came out of it. Some of it was just you know, kind of
it is.
Let's mysteries upon mysteries for the sake of having one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. It is cute though that even in a brand new series, they still incorporated the 1 year later jump. Yeah. Like, right? I think it that was a good choice.
Yeah.
Yes.
And for the 52 fans. If you look closely at the Blue Beetle's chest, it clearly says 52 right on his chest, black on blue. And that's even in this little mini Lego figure. It still sticks around today. So that was a nod to the new 52 at the time of what was going on. As much as you said the story books, I think that there are some weird jumps in this that make a lot to no sense. At one point, they are going to... They go to save this kidnapped baby, right? And this, I think, is happening on the border. And so they're having this big, huge fight over this child. And suddenly, who was it, Matthew? What's his name on the motorcycle shows up?
Peacemaker
shows up. And he's like, here, give me the kid. He takes the kid and rides off. And then the issue ends. And then the next page, we're like, or the next issue, we are into, hey, let's go invade LaDama's fortress.
Yep.
It's a really weird jump.
Yeah. You definitely don't get a lot of follow through on like tertiary storylines. It's mm-hmm. like, oh, we've served the purpose of this. Now it's done.
Part of that is Giffen, though. I mean, that is a Giffen thing. When Giffen gets a storyline where you're hitting those big beats, it's all about it's the bass drum. Basically, it's the bam, ba bam, ba bam. And sometimes you miss a couple of shots on the snare. But the story keeps going because you're following that bass drum beat. And I think that, you know, we saw that in 52. We see that in his runs on Legion of Superheroes, where characters kind of get thrown by the wayside and they come back later. And whether it's by design or not, later on in this series, certain things are revisited and we're like, oh, that's what that meant way mm-hmm. back in issue 4.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's intentional, but it's definitely something that can be off-putting.
Yeah, I think it gets better. I mean, there was a run when I believe Raphael Albuquerque took over, and I don't know how far down the line that was. I want to say it's like in the next year by issue 12 or 13 or something like that.
It's in the tens.
Yeah,
it's 10 or 11, I want to say.
To me, that's when the series kicks into high gear and you start to have a cohesive story starting to build throughout the entire, series run. But here it feels like we're just given a series of vignettes of... Here's the character trying to cope with his new powers and trying to figure out what this alien is on his back, telling him to do things and him trying to adjust with that.
It's a bit of a greatest hits adventure stories.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's part of the problem with the modern, printing expectation is that 6-issue arc to trade paperback. This book clearly wasn't written in that manner.
No. Definitely wasn't.
Because you get a first issue that basically stands alone, and then you get 2 issues that link together, and then you get a standalone, and then you get part 1 and 2 of what's actually like a 4-part story. But that's where the arc ends, because 6 issues to a trade.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like, you know, some of the not all of, but some of the issues with this book are, in fact, the way it's collected, the actual process of stacking these 6 issues. If I were doing this, I would have gone with the first 8 issues, but that would have made a bigger trade paperback.
Well, and again, we're reading in an electronic form. Sure. In 2006, after, you know, the 52 launch and the return of the multiverse and everything, there were a lot of what I consider some weird mandates going on in the books. Like, for example, the second page of every comic had to be a big splash page. So you'll go through this and you will see, like, here's the start of this issue. Here's one page that is kind of recapping or telling something. Flip the page. Suddenly it's a big full page splash because that was a mandate that every book had to do that. There were also some other positive things that were coming out after 52 and Infinite Crisis and all that, is that we saw much more diversity in characters. Right. So here we have Blue Beetle as Hispanic. We have Choi, who is the Atom. Who else did we have popping up? I think Static had come back at around that point. Was going on.
Static had joined the Teen Titans. They brought back more of the Milestone characters, but they kind of got shot in the foot in Justice League.
And, you know, we flash forward 10 years later, right? And it seems like we have...
They've reversed that because there were a bunch of blonde guys from the 60s that everybody wanted to bring back.
Well, I know. And that's kind of the weird thing, right? Where it was this huge push forward where we had a nice diverse cast of heroes. And now we don't really kind of have that except for maybe Blue Beetle.
Well, and that's, I mean, that's a comics thing. That's, this didn't sell, so we're going to revert.
Well, I don't think that they reverted, but I mean, it was this whole thing of...
They did.
Well, from the whole publishing side, from the whole publisher side, they said, yes, let's reverse. They didn't do that necessarily with this character. Jaime seems to be the only one that has survived that 10-year transition.
But when they brought him back in Rebirth, who did they bring him back with?
Yeah, I know. The lesser of the Ted Kords.
They split their differences. They brought back Ted Kord. I mean, and, you know, they brought back Ray Palmer. They brought back Barry Allen. And part of that is, you know, comics is a cyclical game. It's 5 years of brand new and different new hotness. And then 5 years of, oh, my God, let's get back to Crisis on Infinite Earths. Mm-hmm. So, you know, 10 years down the line, we've actually done that dance twice. So it's time for Blue Beetle to be the new hotness again.
Ashley, speaking of the new hotness, do we know who this Ted Kord is in Rebirth?
He's young, sexy, ready for CW Ted Kord.
That's what I was afraid of.
I don't hate it because I really like the dynamic between the two, but weird.
Yeah, there was one person online who was insisting that this was Ted Kord Jr., that this was the Ted Kord that we know.
There's a Ted Kord Jr.
There isn't. And then I was like, really? Show me where, because that's where I want some clarification. And then he couldn't find it either. So, or that person, I don't know.
Because Ted Kord's parents were like industrialists and they founded Kord Omniversal, which became Kord Industries most of the time.
Look at the brain on Brad.
Yeah.
She just had one of these lessons.
Yeah, no, it's a great lesson.
Actually.
Rodrigo. This always comes up anytime that Spanish is being used. How is Spanish used in this book?
It's really not terrible, and you'll note that the main reason why it's not terrible is because it's not overdone. Like, they use it very little, which leaves very little room for mistakes. There's really one actual mistake that I caught, where I think somebody is like calling someone else on a phone and they're like, I think they're trying to say watch the bridge, but the way they're saying it just kind of sounds like look at the bridge, you know, which I know still sounds reasonable, but it's weird. It's like admire the bridge rather than check it for intruders.
Appreciate the architectural beauty of the bridge.
Right. So that's really the only one. And it's a small thing. The only other thing, of course, is that the villain is called La Dama. And even when they're responding to her in Spanish, they're like, sí, La Dama, which makes about as much sense as somebody saying, yes, the lady.
In
English, right? So that's really the only thing. If for some reason her name is always like, maybe she's one of those like egotistical villains who are like, you call me La Dama. I'm like, okay, Dama. No. La Dama.
It's like George Benzade is the captain. She's La Dama.
That's right. It's a dame named Slickback.
you should always call me the captain.
Yes. So what is everyone's reaction to this first arc? Ashley, what are your pros and cons of this series?
Pros, diversity, much needed. Still need some work in that area, DC and Marvel and everyone else. Pro, really easy introduction to a character, even if you know nothing about the legacy that precedes it. Pro, not set in New York, set in El Paso, Texas, which, I mean, for me is a city that I know very little about. So I found that very interesting. Pro, you could read that whole trade in like an hour if you want, cause it sure do move.
Oh, yeah.
Con, not everything is explained super well. Like you guys were saying that, the 1 year jump didn't phase you reading it because everything else has done that. Well, I think if you're picking this trade up as a standalone, it still might be a little bit jarring because we're not in the middle of 1 year later anymore. I'd say that's about it. I think it's a really solid introduction. I think the second volume is much better. But I think for an introduction to this character and this particular incarnation of the character, I think this is a really good it's a really good collection.
Yeah, you know, I agree. One of the nice things, and I could tell you more about El Paso. El Paso, yeah, but I can't go back there. I've been told I can't come back. But that is one of the nice things, because it's not East Coast, West Coast. It's like, here's just an, you know, here's a border town where we can tell this tale, and it doesn't have to be set in a big metropolis. It doesn't have to be set in a fictional city. We can just take this little place and we can introduce a lot of new characters to it. And you're right. It is super easy to get into this character, which is probably why when you look at Batman, the Brave and the Bold animated series, I'm pretty sure after Green Arrow, Blue Beetle was the second character that they introduced in that show.
Yes.
I think it may have been. Yeah.
Because they have the little pre-bit.
But he's in the first episode.
No, he's in the first episode.
Yeah, he's in the pre-bit. Oh, he's in the open? I thought it was the Green Arrow was in the open, and then Blue Beetle was the main story.
It's one or the other, but yeah, it's like either Green Arrow and Blue Beetle are both in it, and one of them's in the open and the other one's in the actual episode.
It's called, that first episode is called like The Rise of the Blue Beetle.
So there you go.
It's that way.
But technically Green Arrow appears real quick in the first. But I mean, he's a super popular character. My kids know him. They have already lots of toys. I think there was McDonald's Happy Meal stuff that had Blue Beetle as toys. So it's a super popular character to get attached to. And the fact that you can bring some diversity into your comic universe, I think that adds to the tale. So I kind of like this. Be honest, Blue Beetle is a third tier superhero in the DC universe. Mm. And to put him in that out of the way place and let him grow as a powerful hero is a pretty big deal. So I think those are the pros, but some of the jarring storytelling, let's hit you with some big stuff and not worry about the minor details, I think is a distraction for me. Matthew?
My biggest complaint about this 6-issue arc is the vast change in art. Duncan Rouleau comes in issue 4, and I swear to God, it's like a whole different universe. And don't get me wrong, there are times when I like Duncan Rouleau's work. This is not one of those places. This is not a strong issue. And then we get to that last issue that feels almost like a compromise point between them. And, you know, that happens. Creative teams change, artists change. These are things that, again, I feel like are exacerbated by the way this issue is collected as a 6-issue arc. Again, another 2 issues would have given you some more smoothing. You get some more of, I think it's Mary Martin coming out of this. But that is a big thing. The visual distinctiveness of this character goes from, you know, looking like a young teenage superhero to looking like a super freaky Powerpuff Girl stretchy guy. And then coming back around to a medium point. And I think that was my big complaint about Blue Beetle in 2006 was the cover of issue 1 has a really, really solid character design with great proportion and really neat looking stuff. And by the end of issue 6 or 7, we've got a much more cartoony look. And I feel like there's a point where somebody actually points out in this issue something I hadn't thought about, was that his faceplate was designed to sort of emulate a luchador's mask, which is one of the complaints that I have, is that it gets more and more cartoony. And by the end of this, it really looks like they're aping in a bad way. They're really making kind of a joke of a luchador's mask, and I don't like it near as much as I did in those first couple of issues. But you know, the story has its ups and downs and its wobbles, but I feel like the art is really where the big trip up comes in for me creatively.
All right. Rodrigo, what are your thoughts, pros and cons?
I'll definitely agree with the art as far as something that threw me. Because, you know, I'm a fan of that big wobbly art sometimes. But in this, because we see it compared to, you know, actual Blue Beetle designs that are all like, you know, physically correct.
Symmetrical.
I don't know. It really makes the other stuff look a little sloppy, which is really kind of what it felt like.
So what you guys are saying is really this series would have benefited from Humberto Ramos doing the art.
Oh God, no.
It would have benefited. It actually would have benefited from any of those guys. Your Humberto Ramos, your Chris Bachalo. Like, you can have a guy who has like the big, overdrawn, exaggerated, giant hands and feet, as long as you're consistent with it, and you know, you give the person enough time to not slop it down.
I wonder if DC didn't think that this would be an ongoing series, and that's why there are so many artist changes on this. Like, every issue has a new artist.
I don't think they did at all.
It was pitched ongoing. I remember that much, but it was also pitched at a time where books lasting 6, 7, 10 issues were
the norm.
Pretty much the norm. Yeah.
Well, right. I think there's
a lot of the stuff that came out of 52 and the Day of Vengeance turned into limited series, is whether they intended it or not.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's a question of priorities, right? It's like, to a certain degree, they were like, hey, Giffen's got a pitch for this. I was like, all right, just do it. Where we got on the art? Just get someone on the art, right? And it's like, they probably didn't prioritize it like everything else that was coming out of this era. So they didn't, you know, necessarily nail down an artist for every issue. And then when people started having conflicts, they just switched. I mean, I think Blue Beetle probably suffers more from a bureaucratic issue than from like an actual like art design problem.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's definitely a consistency thing. You know, when you have a character who is armored and platy and not necessarily technological, but Blue Beetle looks very technological in the first couple of issues.
I know, which really throws me for the whole like, oh, we think it's magic. And I was like, really? You think
Why
those
would you
like
think
big
that?
Mechanical wings and lasers are magic? All right.
Right. And then you get an artist who, you know, has more of a kind of an Humberto Ramos vibe, a looser kind of flippy dippy. And the character's very costume is all sharp angles and lines. But you have an artist who doesn't, you know, prioritize that. And it makes for a weird, especially this early in the character's run. I mean, this is his 6th or 7th issue. And you've completely, you know, changed the vibe on it. And I feel like that, again, I don't want to beat up on a particular artist, but that issue number 4 is really kind of the point where the bloom is off the rose for Blue Beetle, as I recall. And it didn't come back around until they got a solid artist coming into the teens and the... Mm-hmm. You know, that second arc of the book.
Mm-hmm. Rodrigo, I'm sorry, we kind of took a quick detour.
Shut you down, I'm sorry.
Go ahead and finish up with your pros and cons.
Oh, yeah. Well, obviously pros is you don't get a lot of high-profile Latino characters in comics, especially mainstream superhero comics, and definitely not ones that prove to be enduring, so that's nice. Of course, there's always the nagging is like, why isn't this guy a scientist?
Mm-hmm.
You know, but all right, you know what? Let's just roll with like a low income kid from a border town. It's like, if that's the way that we can get Latinos into the door, then let's do it. We'll move on to scientists next.
But, you know, at the same time, though, they also show a strong family unit in this book.
Well, yeah. And honestly, you don't see, I mean, superhero comics are full of kids from the wrong side of the tracks. Right. Mm-hmm. So. Fine, let's show these tracks. You know, like most Robins come from like a terrible place, so that's okay.
Maybe arguably all of them.
Yes. So that's okay. This is not something where I'm gonna pick a fight on, because everything else is executed just fine. And you know, again, Jaime is a fine character with a good moral compass without having to have any of his family brutally murdered in front of him. So points for that already, right?
Yeah, Dad gets shot off panel.
Dad does get shot though, yeah.
Dad does get shot off panel, but he doesn't know about it before he becomes a Blue Beetle.
And he doesn't die, he just gets shot.
Yeah.
Nobody puts anybody in a refrigerator in these 6 issues. Right. That's nice. Yeah. So, you know, points four, it's good. It's solid as far as that. You know, like my only real issues are the art and the fact that sometimes this really feels like it takes shortcuts. It's just like, well, let's not tell you everything that happened with that baby because we need to get back to what I actually want to write about. I don't know why I introduced that baby to two yeah. issues ago. Yeah. Just forget about it for now.
Yeah, there's no baby. It's cool.
You kind of feel like you're having that conversation with the writer. It's like, yeah, maybe introducing that baby wasn't a bad idea, but anyway, let's go to the secret organization.
Yeah. Next, yeah.
Chekhov's baby.
The first issue of Blue Beetle, not Blue Beetle Rebirth number one, but Blue Beetle number one comes out at the end of the month on September 28th. But Rebirth to me felt a lot like we were diving back into this first, you know, six issues of the Blue Beetle universe. And maybe that's where they're going to go, throwing in the Ted Kord Blue Beetle along the way. But with a lot of the setup, it kind of feels that way. So my recommendation is, if you've read Rebirth and you have some questions about this, I say go back to that 2006 series and get that first trade, or at least start reading the issues there on Comixology, because I think it might give you a better background on who all of these characters are. Ashley?
Yes.
Final recommendation?
Read it.
There you go.
Everyone.
Matthew?
It's okay. As 2006 DC Comics go, you can do a lot worse. And, you know, recently somebody challenged me to think of 10 characters who have living parents that they get along with. And for literally a month, all I had was Jaime Reyes. So that right there tells you that you're dealing with something unique and different. And, you know, he should be a scientist. Hopefully in this new thing, he and Ted will be like, Ted's like, oh, yeah, you're a brilliant kid. I'm going to teach you how to be a scientist because I'm sexy Ted from the CW.
I don't like sexy Ted. Rodrigo?
You don't like anything.
I do. I like, and I bet Ashley would agree, two really cool characters at DC are Tim Drake and Jaime Reyes.
F, yeah.
And I think they are probably, I would say, if you're looking for young adult teen heroes, those two are the best ones that are out there.
The Bug and the Bird.
The Bug and the Bird.
Nice. There I would read that.
Yeah. Crossover book.
There you go. DC with Tim Drake off the cover of Detective Comics. You know where you can put him. Down in El Paso.
You know where you can put him.
Rodrigo, what are your final thoughts?
So I would say pick this up because Jaime Reyes Blue Beetle is going to stay despite the like regressionist wave, despite somebody being like, no, Silver Age is best age. There's something about the Jaime Reyes Blue Beetle. Well, it's the design of the character. It's the stories that were different. It's this like kind of a rekindling of the old school Peter Parker, Spider-Man, like, yeah. Oh, I don't know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
Kind of stuff. Like it's all here. And we are going to keep seeing him in cartoons. We're going to see him in comics. So pick this up so you know where it came from.
All right. Thank you, Matthew. Thank you, Rodrigo. Thank you, Ashley, for all being part of the Major Spoilers experience this week. And thank you, listeners, for being part of this issue. That wraps it up for this week. We're going to be back next week. Actually, will not be back next week. But next week, we will be examining the first six issues of the classic Gold Key Star Trek series, because there is something called the 50th anniversary that we can't overlook. And also because we know that you love comics, and we do too. And we will talk with you soon.
Stop talking about comic books or I'll kill you. I don't care if the Hulk could defeat the Man of Steel. I'm gonna rearrange your face if you continue to debate whether Logan's claws could pierce Steve Rogers' shield. I just couldn't care less if they bring back Kraven. Spider-Man's a clone. Stop spending all our cash on back issues of The Flash, or I swear to God you're gonna spend your twilight years alone.
This podcast is copyright 2016 by Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC.